Good evening, everyone. Continue our class on Tefillah and prayer. And tonight, I want to share with you some thoughts that Rabbi Yitzchak Kirzner, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, some thoughts from him, from his Sefer, on Tefillah and prayer. And we can call this a introduction to prayer, or also call it basically the goal. What's the goal of tefillah? What's the goal of davening? What's the goal? So he begins with, you know, what are the main challenges, or two of the main challenges to our ability to daven is, number one, our limited view of Hashem. You know, how do we view the Ribbono Shel Olam? Number one, and I don't mean that necessarily in a big philosophical way, but one of the challenges that we have when it comes to davening is the limited view we have of Hashem and our expectations from Him. You know, what do we expect from the Ribbono Shel Olam? Okay, so as Rabbi Kirzner points out, what typically motivates us to daven? What motivates us to pray to Hashem? The answer is, I need something, right? I need a job, I need this, I need that, I need health. Typically something that we need motivates us to daven. And when we look at davening in that way, you know, as the means of getting what we want, well, if that's what it looks like, if it basically just looks like a vehicle to acquire what we need or what we want, then basically davening turns into a laundry list. We come to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we need A, B, C, D, and F, and G. And we need it and we expect it. We need it and we expect it. And when do we expect it? This afternoon. Okay? That's how sometimes we approach davening. We approach davening as, I've got this list, I come to Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, I give him my tefillah, I'm supposed to get back, and you put it in the card in on one end, and you're supposed to get something out on the other end. That's the expectation. Right. Now, but the answer is, as we know, that tefillah, prayer, is a lot more than just that. It's a lot more than just the vehicle by getting what we want, and therefore having these expectations. The first thing that we have to start with is, we have to look at the Ribbono Shel Olam in a proper way. Now, what that means is like this. Imagine you have a child. Child wants a candy. So they come to the parent and they say, I want a candy. In the child's view, what they want is what they must have. And they must have it right now. And the parent is seen as the vehicle to get what they want. Okay? Now, that's the perspective from the child. The parent's perspective is a different perspective. The parent's perspective is looking at what's good for the child, what's beneficial for the child, and not just looking at the benefit in the present, but, so to speak, in a broader scheme. Is this going to be good for the child to have a candy? If the child has the candy, you know, are they able to eat supper later? And it's much more important eating supper than eating the candy now. Okay? So the child, or a child, works very much from emotion and from a very narrow view, right? I need this. I want this. I must have this. It's based a lot on emotion, and it creates a very narrow view. The parent, on the other hand, is dealing with intellect. What is it that is best for the child? We have to develop what Rabbi Kirzner calls a more mature view of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because we can also be very childish and approach the Ribbono Shel Olam like a child, based on our emotions, based on what we want. And if a child doesn't get what they want, they're disappointed, they feel rejected. And if our approach to the Ribbono Shel Olam is with a childish view, then again, our approach is emotional. And if we don't get what we want, we feel disappointed. We may even feel rejected. Our approach to the Ribbono Shel Olam, our perspective of the Ribbono Shel Olam, has to be a more mature one. A one that we deal with two things. We deal with intellect, which means as best as we can, we try to think about or contemplate based on intellect what the Ribbono Shel Olam is doing. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not an ATM machine. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not a candy dispenser, right? The Ribbono Shel Olam is the Ribbono Shel Olam who creates us and takes care of us and does what is best for us. Do we always see that? No, we don't always see that. Are we able to understand everything that he does? No, we don't. However, if you deal not so much on an emotional level, basically seeing everything based on what you want, but on a more intellectual level, which means now you can see the Ribbono Shel Olam in a bigger picture, that's going to help us not have the negative results that come when we do approach the Ribbono Shel Olam in a childish way. When we approach the Ribbono Shel Olam in a childish way and we don't get what we want, we're disappointed. We don't get it right away, we're disappointed, and we get angry and we get upset, just like a child. But if we come with a more mature view, then we work with our intellect and we're able to better work with the situation in front of us. Another thing that we have to actually deal with when we, again, approach davening, and again, as Rabbi Kurzman is pointing out, the problem that we're facing by davening is rejection, right? We're expecting something, and we have to have it, and we're very disappointed that we don't have it. The more mature approach is going to be able to look at davening in a whole different way, not just as a laundry list, not just as a candy dispenser. And intellect is going to be what we need to approach the Ribbono Shel Olam and davening properly, and also what we call trust. B'tochen. There has to be a level of trust. If there's a level of trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, then again, the approach to prayer, to davening is different, and when things don't work out, it's different. Now, as Rabbi Kurzman points out, what is trust built on? Trust can be built on three things. It's built on the care that you receive from someone over time. It can be built on the amount of care that you receive from the person and how you communicate with that person. If you're going to have trust in someone, these are three ways that the trust can be built upon. So, for instance, if there is someone that's been taking care of you over a long period of time, so they basically have a track record, and based on the track record, you put your trust in them, that they're there in it for you and for your best. If the period of time the care has been given. Depending on the amount of care, that's also going to make a difference in how much trust you have. Because the more care, the more they show that they are benefiting you, the more trust that you have. And then there is an aspect of communication. Communication means that if you can share your innermost thoughts with someone, that you gain trust in that person. If you have a form of communication, if you're very withheld from the person, you're not going to trust the person. If you're very held back, if you hold back from the person, you're not going to trust them as much as when you're open with them and you share what's personal with you with them. You share your innermost thoughts and feelings with them. The more you do that, that also builds a sense of trust. Well, this is the kind of trust that we build up with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because actually, our lives are conditioned to gain trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And our tefillas, our prayers, were enacted, were established to condition us to trust Hashem. What is it in life that gives us a chance of building trust in Hashem? Well, as Rabbi Kurzman points out very interestingly, it's called parents. The experience of parents helps us experience what the Ribbono Shel Olam is. Because when we deal with our parents, we trust them because of the fact of the constant love and care that they've shown us. We will trust them and accept their authority, even if we're not so happy with what their decisions are, because we trust them that they know better and that they're in it for us. And if, let's say, we ask them for something and they say no, right? Then we accept the disappointment because, again, we have that very close connection with them. We have that innate and close connection with them that creates the situation for us to be able to accept whatever, to accept the disappointment that we may have in their decisions. Okay? And if you're going to be able to have trust in a parent, it's got to be that you feel the parent's love. If a child, chas v'shalom, is in a situation where they don't feel their parents' love, so then they just see the parent as controlling them. They're just controlling them, taking advantage of them, manipulating them. So, but in the right circumstances and under the normal circumstances, There's going to be a trust that we gain in our parents, and the experience of trust that we have from in our parents helps us also understand or also be able to trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because, again, the Ribbono Shel Olam, and this is where davening comes in, but the Ribbono Shel Olam cares for us. From day one, he's caring. He's taking care of us. We build trust on the care over time. The amount of care that he gives us is infinite, is unending. It's a tremendous amount. Again, that develops the trust. And we accept his authority because we trust that he knows better. We deal with the accept, and first thing we're disappointed, we accept a disappointment because we understand that he loves us like a parent loves us. The experience that we have from the parent helps us experience and accept what the Ribbono Shel Olam, and put our trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And again, we need to understand and feel the Ribbono Shel Olam's love, because if we don't, then we're going to have a hard time accepting his authority and disappointment and having trust in him. And tefillah is what reminds us of all these things, because that's what tefillah is about. Tefillah is about the constant care the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us. Tefillah is about the Hashem's greatness and understanding his greatness and his power and his understanding of everything for our best and of his love for us. So we both have life experience and our tefillahs to help us build trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay. Now, Rav Kurzak continues and he says that, so now that we understand that tefillah is not just a laundry list, and the Ribbono Shel Olam is not just a candy dispenser, and tefillah is not just a vehicle for getting what we want, so then we have to start understanding more what tefillah is going to do. Now, one thing we know tefillah is going to do, as we just said, is tefillah is going to build trust. It's going to build our trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Tefillah, prayer, is meant to be a vehicle for our growth. And for tefillah to be a vehicle for our growth, anytime you want to grow, you need to have the sense of Hashem's presence. You got to feel that you're in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that you have the ability to relate to it. And as we said last week, what is kavana, or what is one aspect of kavana? We talk about kavana. You have to have kavana when you daven. You have to have focus. You have the concentration when you're davening. What was one of the aspects of kavana that we spoke about last week? Feeling that you're in the, realizing that you're standing in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That was one aspect of kavana. Understanding that you are standing in his presence. When we daven, we see ourselves standing in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Not only that, we are talking to him. We're talking to him. And what are we talking about? You know, making a living, a bit mundane, health, important, but a bit mundane, but it doesn't make a difference. The point is that whatever it is that we're talking about, we realize that we're standing before Hashem, and Hashem is listening. Hashem is listening. So we've got that situation for spiritual growth. We know we're in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we're relating to that presence. Now, Rabbi Kurzak continues that the Ribbono Shel Olam created us with needs. And therefore, we have a need to pray to Hashem. And therefore, we are constantly relating to him. Now, that means like this. We're not like, you know, angels aren't created with too many needs. The Ribbono Shel Olam could have created us without any needs. But the Ribbono Shel Olam did create us with needs. And he created us with needs because if we have needs and we don't have everything, then we got to turn somewhere to get what we need. And in the case of, now again, we may turn to certain means of gaining what we need, but that's not where the only place we're supposed to turn. We're supposed to turn to Ribbono Shel Olam. We're supposed to pray to him. We're supposed to speak to him and ask him and relate to him about our needs. But the point is that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us in life the means by which to turn to him. And that is a very important aspect in our life. And this is really brought out in a way that I've mentioned before from Parshas Bereishis, where we have the story of how Adam Arishan was told not to eat from the tree of knowledge. He ate from the Eitz Hadas. The Nachash convinced him and Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas. The Nachash was punished. What was the punishment that he was told? Agachin chateilech, you're going to go on your stomach. Va'afar teichal, you're going to eat dust.
Everything will taste
okay,
like
it says you're going to eat dust. Wow. Okay? Which means, again, according to where the words seem to say it, and some of the Mepharshim learn, that, you know, he has the dust to eat. Now, dust may not taste too good, but, you know, there's plenty of it. He's not lacking it. So, you know, it seems like a kind of interesting curse to give the Nachash about the fact that all he has is dirt, when, from one aspect, may not have too much taste, but there's plenty of it. He's never going to be lacking it.
You have to worry.
So it's a very, he doesn't have to worry about where he's going to get it from. So it's a kind of, it's an interesting type of curse. So the answer that's given is, the curse is not so much about eating dirt. The curse is really about the fact that because he has so much dirt, he never has a need to turn to Ribbono Shel Olam. Never has anything pushing him to turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What's he missing? He has what to eat, plenty of dirt around. So he never has anything motivating him to turn to Hashem. And that's a curse. That's a curse. And that was Hashem's way of saying to the Nachash, you know what? I don't have nothing to do with you. Here. Here's all your food. Here's everything you need. You're all set. You're set for life. And therefore, you're not going to turn to me. Because you know what? I don't want you to turn to me. The Ribbono Shel Olam who gives us needs is actually giving us the needs because he wants to give us the opportunity to turn to him. And that is what, then that, and that is how we have to go and understand of what it is that the Ribbono Shel Olam has created us with needs for. We have to constantly relate to him. And unlike the Nachash, the Ribbono Shel Olam tells us that we are going, that I want you, I'm giving you the chance to turn to me. The Nachash, I don't want him to turn to me, but you will have needs because I want you to turn to me. And as Rabbi Kurzner points out, there are a lot of people in this world like the Nachash. When people feel satisfied, when people feel like they have no needs, everything's okay, do they turn to Ribbono Shel Olam? No. No. If that's part of the challenge. The challenge is to be able to, that even when you have everything that you need, by davening, you say to Ribbono Shel Olam, thank you. Thank you. Please continue giving it to me, and thank you for giving it to me. But unfortunately, it comes out a lot of times that when we don't need, we don't feel the motivation or the connection because, you know, everything's okay. There's a story that I've told this story here a number of times. But again, it's a beautiful story, and it brings out this point in a very special way. So the story goes of a woman who was selling breads, like little challahs, little breads. That was her parnasa. She would bake these little rolls. Every day she went to the marketplace and sold her rolls. And when a customer would come, she would take a roll, wrap it up, thank the customer profusely for buying her things. And between customers, what did she do? She said to Hillam. She davened, she said to Hillam. She was saying to Hillam the whole time. A customer came, she'd interrupt, take care of the customer, go back to her Hillam. So one day a wealthy man was going through the marketplace and he noticed this woman. And he said to himself, what a shame. What a shame this woman has to, seems like such a righteous woman. She's saying Tillim, you know, every second, if she's not dealing with the customer, she's saying Tillim. Wouldn't it be wonderful that she shouldn't have to bother schlepping the stuff out here to the marketplace, and she'd be able to go ahead and say Tillim a whole day. So he approaches her and he says, so I want to make a deal with you. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to send you money every month. You don't need to bake the breads anymore. You don't need to come to the marketplace to sell the breads. You'll be taken care of. You can just serve the Ribbono Shel Olam the entire day. She was so happy. She thanked him profusely. And that was the story. Okay? A few weeks later, the wealthy man comes back to the marketplace. And who does he catch in the marketplace?
The same woman.
The same woman. But she's still saying Tillim. But she's got the rolls, and she's selling the rolls, and she's saying Tillim. The man comes over to her and says, what's going on? Didn't we make a deal? And she said, you know what? I don't want the deal anymore. Here, I brought you back the money. He says, what do you mean? We made a deal. You can't break the deal. She says, I don't want the deal anymore. He says, let's go. We got to go to the Rav. Got to go to the rabbi. You know, we made a deal, and I'm going to demand that you keep the deal. So they went to the Rav, and the wealthy man told the story to the Rav about, you know, what happened here with this woman. And the Rav turns to the woman and says to her, Nu, I made a deal with you. Why don't you give me the deal? So she goes, Rebbe, I have to tell you. When I was selling my rolls, I would wake up in the morning and I would turn my eyes to heaven, to Shemaim, and I would say, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, please give me success today. And I would go and I would take the flour and then the water and I would knead it. And I would daven to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, please make it that the dough comes out good. And then I wait for the dough to rise, and I would daven to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, the dough should rise properly. Then I would take the bread and I put it into the oven, and I daven, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, please make these breads bake well. And then I would take it out to the marketplace. And as I walked and as I waited in the marketplace, I daven to Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I'd say, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, please send me customers. And then when a customer would come, after the customer would leave, I would thank the Rebbeinu Shel Olam for sending me a customer. So when I was baking the breads and doing my business, I was constantly, you know, looking to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Then I didn't have to work anymore. And I was saying to him a whole day. And I didn't feel it. I didn't feel the connection anymore. I didn't feel the relationship anymore. She's saying to him a whole day. I didn't feel the relationship anymore. And that's why this is my reason for not keeping the deal anymore. The deal was so that I can serve the Rebbeinu Shel Olam better. But I can't doing it this way. I serve Rebbeinu Shel Olam better when I'm working and I need to look to him for help. So the Rav gave the psak. She was right. She didn't have to keep the deal anymore. She gave back the money and she went happily back to selling her rolls and saying to him in the marketplace. But this woman understood what's the goal. What is prayer meant to do? It's meant to forge a relationship. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam, we know that the Gemara tells us that Sarah, Rivka, and Rachel, and Leah should have been also. They were all akaris. They were all unable to have children. And the Gemara says, why did the Rebbeinu Shel Olam make them barren? Mamish barren, unable to be able to have children? So that they would daven. Which means that, what do you think, Sarifka, Rachel, and Leah wouldn't daven? Of course they would daven. But when they had that need, when they wanted to have a child, that was no, without any question, that was going to motivate them to daven at a level of intensity that they wouldn't have had otherwise. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants us to go ahead and daven, because when we daven, we forge the relationship to him that comes from our needs. We have the needs, we know we have the needs, and it's the base of these needs that we then turn to Rebbeinu Shel Olam and forge a relationship with him as we ask him for what we need. Now, Rabbi Kirzner here now adds what I think is a really interesting idea. And he said, so one thing we mentioned before is that our needs are going to create our need to turn to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam and forge a relationship, right? If we don't have the needs, then we just don't have that. We don't have that motivator to get us to turn to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And so, of course, when you turn to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you forge a relationship like a parent. You have the trust and you have the love and you have the gratitude. And the gratitude hopefully now motivates you to serve him. And this is all part of what davening is getting us to do. But then he adds a very interesting idea. I've never seen this idea before. And that idea is like this. If you understand that when you come to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam to daven, that this is more than just a laundry list, and the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is more than just a food dispenser, but rather what you're coming here to do is to grow, and you're coming here to forge a relationship with him, then when you ask him for what you need, you should be thinking twice before you ask. You should be thinking about what you ask. You shouldn't be just walking up and saying, I need this. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I know I'm all in your hands. I need this. That's what he wants me to do, right? Wants me to do that. But if that is what you know that you're doing, then actually, when you ask for something, you should be thinking about and saying, do I really need this? Is this going to help me serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? Am I going to use this in the service of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, or am I going to use this for my own self-gratification? This is part of what the growth, the goal and the growth of davening is about. The growth, of course, comes from, number one, the relationship and connection to Hashem. But because of that relationship and connection to Hashem, you should be saying to yourself, am I going to deal with this properly? What am I asking for? And I'm asking the Rabbeinu Shel Olam for it. And he's creating this whole situation so that we can have a relationship. All right. So now what you're asking for, is it going to help for the relationship? Is it going to be part of the relationship? Or is it not? So part of the growth of davening is going to be that when you ask for something, you're going to think about what you're asking for. It's not just going to be automatic, I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask for something. And when I ask for it, I'm going to think about it in relation to, will this be something that will help me serve Hashem or not? If it's not going to help me serve Hashem, then I shouldn't be asking for it. And if I'm asking for it, I need to make sure that I'm going to use it in the service of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Now, the next thing he discusses is the fact that we daven three times a day. Chazal, Ashkenaz HaGdoila, when they instituted davening, three times a day. Okay, when they instituted twice was an obligation, the third was voluntary. Bayer was voluntary originally. But there are three times a day for davening. So how do we understand the three times a day, the mandatory times? So he explains that Chazal introduced the idea of davening three times a day because, again, davening is about forging a relationship with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And there are three times a day that we should be forging a relationship with him. You know, the Kuzri says the same way we have three meals a day, we have three tefillas a day. Rav Kurzner explains the times for each tefillah is because of how each time is a time that we need for forging a relationship with Hashem. Shachris, the morning. You start your day in the morning. So how do you start your day? You start your day with meeting up with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. You start your day with being aware that everything comes from Hashem. You start your day with appreciating everything that Hashem gives you. And now that sets the tone for the rest of the day. If I start the day off recognizing that everything comes from Hashem and appreciating Him for everything that comes from Hashem, then the rest of my day is different. How I relate to people is different. How I do business is going to be different. How I dedicate, what I dedicate my day for is going to be different. So the Chazal instituted, you need to daven in the morning. Got to daven in the morning. Because if you daven in the morning, that will now set the tone for the rest of the day. You also have to daven, Chazal said, in the afternoon. The afternoon, whether it's the middle of the afternoon, whether you got to interrupt the middle of your work to daven, whether it's at the end of the day of davening, but still the end of the day. The afternoon is, I've already worked in the day. I've done my work. I've been involved in my work. Maybe I'm still involved in my work. And the more involved, and while we're involved in our work, we can tend to forget what is the true source of our destiny. You start thinking that it's my work and what I do, that's what defines my destiny. That makes my difference in life. Because when you're there and you're involved in doing, you can forget about the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. So therefore, the sages said, you're going to daven in the afternoon. And in the afternoon, you're going to daven and remind yourself, again, everything comes to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And you're not going to think that your creativity is what decides your fate. And then at night, he says, we daven at night because that is where we're supposed to gain trust in the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Comes the night, you look at your day, and you say, I didn't get this done. I didn't accomplish this. This didn't work out. So you daven at night, where you gain your trust, where you strengthen your trust in the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and you say, Morgen Zeichatag, tomorrow is also a day. Tomorrow I'll have another chance. Tomorrow there'll be other opportunities. So the three times that Chazal instituted that we are to daven then, they had a very specific point. It was about bringing the Rebbeinu Shel Olam into our lives. And if the and Chazal understood that if we don't, if it's not mandatory to daven, it's like, you know, davening is supposed to be from my heart, right? So when I feel like davening, I'll daven. When I don't feel like davening, I won't daven. People make that kind of argument. The problem is that when you rely on yourself to daven, what happens? You don't daven. You get too busy with everything else. And you get all caught up in everything else that you're doing. And you forget about the relationship with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. So therefore, Chazal understood that they have to go ahead and actually obligate us to daven, and not just obligate us to daven once a day, or once a week, or once a month, or once a year. It's got to be at least two or three, got two mandatory, three times a year. It has to be morning, afternoon, and there's an evening time for it also. Because by making this mandatory, by creating these times that we must do it, then it's not like our arms are being twisted. Oh, you got to daven. On the contrary, when you got to daven, you don't feel like davening, Rabbi Kirzner says. You actually should be thinking about the fact of how now I have the opportunity to forge the relationship. I may not feel that relationship, but now I have the chance to forge it and to strengthen it. And therefore, that is why we have the mandatory davening, and we have the fact that we have it three times a day. Yeah.
I do it 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. Gee whiz.
Yep. Now, Reb Kirzner brings out another point that many commentaries bring out, and that is the fact that, this sitter that we have in front of us, right, the Shemayna Esrei, right, the whole format of the sitter, comes from the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, men of the Great Assembly. And they decided, they made a formal way to daven, a text for davening, and they made that text, I don't know historically what year they made it in, okay? But they made it for the rest of time, right? For the rest of time they made it. That means that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah did what they did with Ruach HaKodesh, did it with a divine wisdom, and with a wisdom that enabled them to create a format that would serve the Jewish people for all generations to forge the relationship with Hashem that prayer gives us. They had that wisdom to create the format, the text and the format, by which all Jews, every single Jew, each one with their own challenges, each one with their own purpose in life, each one with the unique experiences that only they have in life, but they will all be able to use this format, this text, this sitter, this form of prayer to forge the relationship that we're supposed to form. He also points out that when the Hebrew, when we want to say to daven, okay, so the Hebrew word for to daven is lehispalel. That's the Hebrew word for davening. Lehispalel, or pilel, which we use for the word for davening, also means judge, to judge. Which therefore, he says, means that when we are davening, we are judging. Who are we judging? Yourself. Judging ourselves, right? We know that davening is called avodah shebelev. The Gemara calls it, says, ula avodah b'chol avavchem, serve Hashem with all your heart. So Chazal say, ezehi avodah shebelev, what's the avodah, the serving of the heart? Zut filah, that's prayer. Well, Rabbi Kirzner takes the wording a little bit more theoretical, right? What does the word avodah mean? Work, right? We use it as service, right? But it means work. So therefore, he says, that means when we call tefillah avodah shebelev, that means tefillah is working the heart. What are you working? How are you working your heart? How are we judging ourselves? Here again, he goes back to the point that he said before. When you stand before the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, let me ask for your needs, you have to judge yourself. And you have to say to yourself, what am I asking for? And what am I doing with my life? You got to make a judgment. You got to weigh things out and judge. Where are you at? What are you doing with your life? And therefore, what am I going to be doing with what I'm asking for from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam? When I am working, when I'm doing the work of my heart, I am working on myself. I'm working on myself to ask for my needs in order to serve Hashem. And therefore, when we put it that, okay, one more thing. Then Rabbi Kurzer talks about the fact that when we daven, right, we verbalize our davening. Right? We don't think it. You can't fulfill davening just by thinking davening. You've got to say the words. Yeah, that's halachas. If you can't say the words, then maybe you could do it in your mind. But in the way, the form that you have, when you can do it, the form you have to do it is verbalizing. And the question is why? Why did Chazal say we have to verbalize our prayers? And the answer is because if our prayers were just in our minds, then basically what stays in your mind is not always so realistic, right? It's an idea. It's a thought. It's an idea, right? It's like this thing floating around in your mind. When you say something, you've got to crystallize in your mind what you're going to say. It has to become real. And not only that, when a thought goes from, so to speak, potential, and then it actually comes out, right? So to speak, it comes out in reality. That's why you remember better, right? Because when something comes out into the open, it becomes more a part of reality. Not just something floating in your mind. It comes out into the world. It comes out into reality, and it becomes more real to you. If you can't talk to someone, right, then your relationship isn't real.
You may never know what you want.
They know what you want. You know what they want. Okay? There's no reality. The relationship is lacking a very strong amount of reality. And therefore, we have to go ahead and verbalize what we daven. Because the relationship that we're forming with Rabbeinu Shlomo has to come verbally so that, again, it's not just something theoretical in our minds, but something concrete and real. And therefore, the point of the goal of davening is not just to get what we need. But the goal of davening is to forge a relationship with the Rabbeinu Shlomo. To forge a relationship, to understand that everything comes from Him, that we have everything from Him. He cares about us. He does what's best for us. He loves us. He wants to hear from us. He wants us to grow through this experience. He wants us to forge the relationship. And part of forging that relationship is going to be, part of the growth that's actually going to come from tefillah. The growth that's going to come from that relationship that tefillah is the idea of judging ourselves, working on ourselves, and asking ourselves, where am I holding in life? What am I doing with my life? What am I going to be doing with what I'm asking for? Am I going to be doing what I'm asking for? Will I be doing with it the service of Hashem? And if I will be, that's what I should be asking for. If I won't be, then I shouldn't be asking for it. But that's the goal of prayer. The goal of prayer is to grow spiritually and to forge that loving relationship with the Rabbeinu Shlomo.